Welcome to All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio with your host, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida State's Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is educate people and make wine less confusing and more friendly.
Call our guest line during the live show and talk about wine on air. Dial area code 646-727-3235. From coast to coast.
Basser, Kansas.
Deming, New Mexico.
Ithaca, New York.
Knoxville.
Lancaster County, Pennsylvania.
Lexington, Kentucky.
Montana.
Moscow, Idaho.
New Hampshire. New Mexico.
Santa Rosa.
Sevierville, Tennessee.
South Dakota.
The coast of Maine.
The Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
Westport, Mass.
And around the world.
TheDriftingWinemaker.com. I just arrived in Bali about 3 days ago.
All About Wine is on, and our phone lines are open. In the U.S., call 646-727-3235.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that. Alba Vineyards.
Blog.10Live.
Boy Flip Winery.
Brotherhood.
Camas Prairie Winery.
Candia Vineyards.
Hello di Borghese.
Eagle Springs Winery.
Flathead Lake Winery.
Free the Grapes.
Grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery.
Hershey Harrisburg Wine Country.
How this show has grown from, you know, maybe a couple hundred to over 40,000 people. And yeah, that's fantastic.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery.
Hummingbird Ridge Winery.
Toy Soy of Wine.
Fuller Vineyard.
Prairie Berry.
Rainborn Wines.
Rocky Top Wine Trail.
Gila Lara Vineyards and Winery.
Southwest Wines.
Haber Hill.
Ten Spoon.
University of Kentucky Extension.
Vineyard at Hershey.
Bebock Winery.
Walt Vineyard.
Westport Rivers.
Wine Flower.
And now, it's the show dedicated to the wine industry. Although, sometimes we do get off track.
The most well-known haunted winery in the Midwest.
Belvoir Winery. I've heard voices at the winery.
If you have any questions or anything to talk about, we will be more than happy to talk to you about or search it for you or try to find information for you out there, because there is a lot of information out there about wine.
It's All About Wine. Here is your host, Ron.
Thank you, bus people. Thank you, bus people. Yeah, it's out there. The little storm went through, and now they are good, and everything's okay, and we are ready to go. Mike's not with us again. Don't know what the problem is. Hope everything's all right on his end. But we have a great show tonight. We have ourselves a guest. Oh, actually, two guests. Michael Houlihan and Bonnie Harvey. You are probably not familiar with the names, but you are probably familiar with what they did. They are the founders and the first ones that started Barefoot Winery. And everybody's familiar with Barefoot Winery. I mean, it's in all the stores. You can walk in just about anywhere and find Barefoot Winery on the shelf. Targets just everywhere. They got it distributed all over. So they are going to tell us their story. They're going to tell us what it's all about and how they founded the winery in a little garage and how it grew and where the picture of the foot came from and all that good stuff. A reminder, October is going to be our haunted month, so stay with us. In a couple of weeks, I'm going to start getting a hold of wineries that are haunted, and Joyce Joy of Wine will be with us in October talking about the haunted wineries and all that on the 24th, a week before Halloween. We'll probably not have a program on Halloween because it is Halloween. We're looking forward to doing all that. And my Chico's always online and I can't find him here. This thing is like I told you last week, my computer was fixed, and because it was fixed, I am still having issues trying to get everything sorted out here. So let me go get our guest, and we'll get... Oh, wait a minute. I think Mike has just joined us here.
Yes.
Yes,
computer
all right.
Computer issues aside, now I am here.
And well, thank you. Told everybody, I'm glad we didn't have any problems, but obviously you did. But
yes.
I've already told them about who our guest is going to be. Told them also that October is going to be our haunted winery month, and if you want to go grab Michael and Bonnie, then
yep, I'll be right back.
Okay, very good.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, you don't have to listen to a little bit of music while I do that, then. That's cool. So we are going to get them on, and they'll tell us a story. They also wrote a book, and they will give you all the information, everything you need to know to get the book and read about it and find all that. So I'm looking forward to this interview tonight. It should be a lot of fun. I talked to Michael for a little bit the other day, and interesting. He travels around the country and does speaking engagements. He said he's going to be here in Florida, as a matter of fact, coming up in a week or so. I think reasonably soon here. He said he's going to be making a trip down here to Florida. So that should be fun. And I don't know. I don't know where he's going to be exactly, maybe in Miami or something. But he will, I'm sure we'll find out, and he'll tell you about that. So Barefoot Winery is familiar, probably as familiar as any winery that you're aware of or any bottle of wine that you're aware of out there. You see it everywhere, and it's on shelves in just about every place you can look. You're going to see a bottle of Barefoot Winery sitting there. And so we'll let them tell you about their marketing and let you tell about how they started and all that stuff. And we've got Michael sitting back here. Let's get him on here. Michael and Bonnie, welcome to the show. Glad you can join us tonight.
Well, thank you, Ron. We are delighted to be here.
Hi, Ron. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Michael. Thanks, Bonnie. First time I've had a chance to talk with you. I've talked to Michael a little bit before. I've been sitting here telling everyone about Barefoot Winery, you see it everywhere. I said, you guys are going to come on and tell you how you started, how the Barefoot, and who's, and all that stuff. I'm just going to let you run with it.
Well, Ron, we just wrote a book called The Barefoot Spirit, How Hardship, Hustle, and Heart Built America's Number One Wine Brand, and it was just on the New York Times bestseller list for business books for 8 solid weeks.
Wow.
So we're pretty jazzed about that. And what's interesting about it, and your listeners will appreciate this, is there's been a lot of books written about wine, what it tastes like, how to pair it, where the great growing regions are, who the great winemakers are. But there's never been a book written until this one about how wine gets to you. Through all the convoluted laws and procedures of the supermarkets and everything else, and what it's like to actually build a brand. Well, our brand has an interesting story. I'm going to let Bonnie tell you a little bit about it.
Well, the way the book is written is it's stories of what took place in our lives for 20 years building the Barefoot brand. And it's not as boring as it may have sounded when Michael was describing it, those rules and regulations, and I'm about ready to take a snooze. But we had an award-winning journalist, Rick Cushman, who was the wine writer for the Sacramento Bee for many years. And we gave him the stories, and he put them in a really cute, fun business adventure story is really what it is. And it tells how we started... we never really intended on getting into the wine industry. We actually kind of fell into it backwards. I had a client who wasn't getting paid for his grapes, and that was 3 years worth. So it was a considerable amount of money, Ron, and I asked Michael if he could go to the winery and collect the funds that was owed my grower. So he went to the winery and found out that they were in the process of going bankrupt. So it really didn't look very good. They had no funds to pay this debt. But Michael, being the good businessman that he is, he just kept looking around and asking questions. And finally, he was able to negotiate a trade for bulk wine and bottling services. They had a big, beautiful bottling line there. And so that was a start. It got us an inch closer to the funds, but not a foot, so to speak. So we went about getting all the licenses and finding out what all the regulations were, and I researched bottling supplies. Michael went into the marketplace to find out what it was that they needed. We had bulk wine. We could buy glass and put it in a bottle, but what's the label look like? What does the market need? During our research period, my client realized that he had a full-time job as a winemaker. In addition to being a vineyard owner, he really didn't have the time to get started on a new business. So he said, basically, I guess I'm just going to have to take the hit and not get paid because I can't take over this business. Michael said, now, wait a minute, that can't be. It was, you know, a big six-figure number. And we said, well, I'll tell you what, instead of our working for you, you can work for us. You can be our winemaking consultant. We will get grapes from your vineyard. We'll take over this debt, and we'll also take the bottling services and the bulk wine. We'll put it in a bottle, sell it in the chains, and pay you back. You know, what's it going to take, 2-3 years? How long, you know, how hard could it be?
Yeah, really. With apologies to all the wine listening out there. Yeah.
Yeah. So obviously, you know, you meet people every day that say, "Oh, I got a great idea. I'm going to have my own wine." You know, they have no idea what's involved. I mean, you can have a wine company and set up a tasting room, and you probably need about 30 licenses to do that. But when you do it, people drive up to your location, they taste your wines, they buy your wines, and then they drive home. Now, sometimes you can join a club and you can have wines delivered to you if you're in one of the 35 states that allows that. But if you're selling wines that are at the lower price points, you really have to go through the distribution system because people are not going to spend $5 to have a $5 bottle of wine delivered to their door. They'll spend $5 to have a $40 bottle of wine delivered to their door without thinking twice about it. So there are some realities. What people forget about the wine business is wine is heavy stuff. You know, it's made up of glass. It's made up of liquid. So I can't think of anything that would be heavier than that. You know, one case weighs like almost 35 pounds, in some cases 40. And you just try to lift that, move it around. Imagine trying to move 10 cases of it around. And so all of a sudden you're talking pallets and forklifts, and now you're talking trucks, and you're talking warehouses. And, oh, and don't forget they got to be air-conditioned if they're going to go to Florida, right, or the corks are going to pop. So, I mean, you know, this is a perishable item. So we had no idea that any of that was involved. We said, how hard could it be, see? And we haven't even talked about the boring laws yet. But so one of the things that happened was Bonnie went out and she researched all the legal requirements and, you know, got us all the licenses and everything else. And meanwhile, I was out beating the bricks and, you know, hitting all the stores and asking them what they wanted. And, you know, we like to say making friends in low places. So what we did is we would ask everybody. We didn't just ask, you know, the wine buyers. We asked the clerks and we asked the forklift operators. We asked the people on the bottling line. We asked people who actually had dirty fingernails, you know, the people who were working in the industry. And we said, you know, what's missing? What does this industry need? And they came back and they said, well, you know, it needs a good $5 bottle of wine that is a straight varietal. You know, vintage is not that important, but what is important is that the price point can't be over at the time $4.99. That would be like $8.99 today. And so work backwards from the price point. So we did, and I went to talk to a guy who was the buyer for a large supermarket in California, you know, sort of like your Publix chain down there in Florida. And I said, you're the largest wine buyer, you know, in the state. What do you think I should do here? And he said to me, he says, well, he says, I'll tell you since you asked me. He says, I think you should make it a salt and pepper act. He says, I think you should put it in the pig, and I think you should make it better than Bob and cheaper than Bob. And I'm writing all this down, and I'm going, better than Bob, cheaper than Bob, put it in a pig. And I'm looking at myself like, what the heck is this guy talking about? And he says, you got that? And I said, yep, I got it. He says, oh, and one more thing, he says, the name. He says, make the name the same as the logo. He said, make the logo visible from 4 feet away so she can see it when she's pushing her cart by. You know, and he says, and don't make it a leap. Don't make it a valley. He says, and for God's sakes, don't make it a chateau. And don't put it in French. Put it in plain English. So she got all that. And I said, yeah, I wrote it all down. And I'm walking down the hall, and I'm thinking, you know, I don't know if I'm confused or if I just got a master's degree in wine marketing. So I went to my friend who was in the wine industry for 20 years, and I said, Hampton, would you please translate something for me? And he said, sure. I said, you know, what's a Salt and Pepper Act in wine? He says, oh, he says, that's like a, you know, a red and a white in the same label, you know, salt and pepper. I said, oh, I see. I said, well, who's Bob anyway? He says, oh, Bob. He says, that's Robert Mondavi. I said, oh, great. This has got to be better than Robert Mondavi and cheaper than Robert Mondavi. That'll be a tall order, but we did have Alexander Valley fruit. So then the next thing that happened was I said, pray tell me, what is a pig? He says, oh, a pig. He says, that's the big fat bottle of wine. That's the one that's a 1.5 liter Magnum. It's not the 755th that everybody thinks of as a wine bottle. It's twice the size. I said,
right.
Okay, so now I know where he's got room on his shelf for a new wine product. And, you know, in retrospect, we were smart to ask, because if we hadn't asked, we might have done what a lot of winemakers do, which is to make wine, then go in. And even the guy said, you know, everybody comes in here and beats me up about what they make and tries to get me to buy it, and you come in here and ask me what I want, and nobody's done that before. So he wished me luck, and I disappeared, and boy, we went out and we started thinking about a label that would work, you know, the name and all that. And I'll let you tell Bonnie tell you a little bit about how we got the label.
Well, it was interesting. We thought about it for I think a couple months, wondering. We went out and looked on the shelf, and we saw, oh, it just looks like a pizza out here. I can't figure out what jumps off the shelf. None of it did. It just all seemed to be kind of blurred together. And I couldn't pronounce half the names anyway. They all are in French, and I don't speak French. So I thought, well, certainly if we're going to be in the wine industry, it better be a name I can pronounce. In fact, all the words on the label ought to be something that I can pronounce. So we didn't have any French on the label whatsoever. And we decided it would be interesting to use a label that hadn't been used for about 12 years. It was called Barefoot Bynum. So we knew the grapes were originally crushed barefoot, and we thought that would be kind of cute. And if we put a big foot on the label, that would certainly be something that she, his shopper that bought the majority of the wine, could see from 4 feet away as she pushes her cart down the aisle, this being an important factor. So I came home from, we came home from a dinner party one night, and I said, Michael, I've got it. I know what the label looks like. And he said, oh, wait, can't this wait till morning? I'm tired. And I said, no. He says, I want you to draw it here on our blackboard. So he took the piece of chalk, and I said, draw a foot. And he drew a foot, and I said, now draw the word barefoot into the arch of the foot. And he did that. And I said, there, that's what our label is going to look like. This is going to sell a lot of wine. So we sent it off to an artist in Southern California, and she came back with a sketch of a foot that was kind of squat and not at all what I had in mind. And I said, you know, I really need something that's longer and thinner, and it has a higher arch. And she says, well, you know, I'm a very visual person. She says, I can draw it, but you've got to show me a picture. I said, well, okay, and I thought about that for a minute, and I said, long, thin foot with a high arch. I've got one of those right here on the end of my leg. So I sent Michael out. I sent Michael out to get the largest ink pad he could find, and he brought that back with some artist paper, and I put my foot in the ink pad and onto the artist paper and sent that off to our artist, and that's how the Barefoot label was created. And
cool.
We were so proud. we had exactly what the Lucky's chain store wine buyer had asked for. We had a Cabernet Sauvignon and a Sauvignon Blanc. That's a red varietal and a white varietal. That was our salt and pepper. We had Alexander Valley fruit. I can't say it was better than Bob. It was priced the same as Bob. Great. And we put it in a pig, in a big 1.5-liter bottle, those fat bottles that are twice the size that you usually get your wine in. And Michael took it back to Don Brown, who was the buyer he talked to that had asked for that. And he was so proud. We just bottled our first bottling, and it was at Easter of 1986, and he put a bottle of Barefoot Cabernet Sauvignon and Sauvignon Blanc on the buyer's table. And he goes, there, he goes, that's just what you asked for. And he felt kind of like a kid showing his dad his good report card. He thought, oh, he's just going to love this, right? And Michael said, how many truckloads do you want, Don? And Don turned to him and he said,
Don looks at me and he says, are you crazy? He says, I can't put this in. Nobody's ever heard of anything called Barefoot. This isn't going to sell. You know, and besides, you guys got a foot on the label. What are you doing up there in Sonoma County anyway? And so, boy, I tell you, my heart sunk, and I thought, well, you know, we've bottled all this up, and we were sure you were going to buy it. He says, if you want to run an ad, you know, on the California television networks and get this out there and make it a household word and spend a couple $100,000 in advertising, you know, then I'll put it in my, you know, 200 stores. And we said, well, you know, we don't have $1,000, let alone $200,000. And, you know, what can we do? He says, well, he says, then you got to make it a household word before I'll put it in. And he says, that means you got to sell it to every independent mom-and-pop store there is. You got to go door-to-door. You got to sell it yourself. I said, but Don, I said, that's going to take 2 years. He said, that's right. You better get started. So we went out and we started to sell it door-to-door. And, I mean, this is 1986. And people in the stores had the same attitude that Don did. They went, you guys got to be crazy. What is this, a joke? You got a foot on this thing. We'll put it in, but if it doesn't sell in 30 days, we're going to discontinue this brand and you'll never be back in here again.
Whoa.
So we said, well, that's how they operate, you know, because they got expensive shelf space. You really can't blame them. They're paying for lights and power and security and, you know, staff, and it's valuable real estate, and they can't take it up with something that's not a mover.
Right.
So we thought, how are we going to get this wine to sell? And just about that time, we get this phone call from a guy in Chinatown, San Francisco, and he says, well, you guys are some wealthy winemakers. You know, why don't you write us a check for our kids after school park that this neighborhood association is trying to build down the street? And we said, well, you know, we think you got the wrong phone number, pal, because we're not the big rich winery. We just got it started. And in fact, this is our international offices here in our laundry room. And that's where we started. And so we said, but we do have a lot of wine, you know, because we couldn't sell it to Lucky. So, you know, we'll give you some wine. You can use it for your fundraiser. You can use it. You can pour it for your dinner. You can auction it off and maybe raise some money that way. So they said, fine. They took the wine. We didn't hear from them for about 2 weeks. And then all of a sudden we noticed that our wines were starting to fly off the shelf in the Chinatown stores in San Francisco. And we thought, gee. And then we realized we'd done something brilliant. We'd blundered onto something without doing it deliberately, and that was, we gave the members of that neighborhood association, which were all the same people who went into those stores, a social reason to buy our wine product. They could have bought any product. They chose to buy ours. Why? Because they saw that we supported their fundraiser for the kids after school park, and they knew what it tasted like. And, of course, that foot on the label, they couldn't forget. So we said, you know, this might be an opportunity for us to go out there, because we had wine and no money, to go out there and get the word out on our products. So we began to donate wine to neighborhood groups that were in the neighborhood surrounding our stores. And we did that in neighborhood after neighborhood. After 2 years, we were such a big household name in California that the chains put it in. And when the chains put it in California, then we began to expand into chain stores across the United States and got into all the chains in Florida, you know, Lyons and Publix and, you know, even Harris Teeter up in the Carolinas. And they all wanted it because they knew that it would sell. And the reason it sold was because it was, you know, it was at the time $4.99, you know, for a Magnum. And who was buying it? The people that were buying it were surprising because all the gatekeepers were wine aficionados and they were males. But the supermarket shopper was predominantly female. She was a mother of two, you know, in her mid-30s, and she was looking for, of all things, Tuesday night wine. She wanted, like, everyday wine that tastes good, that was dependable from year to year to year. And so we gave her non-vin wines that were blended to taste the same and have the same profile from year to year, and that turned out to be what she wanted in terms of dependability. Not that she wouldn't buy a nice bottle of Saturday night wine, you know, at the $9.99 price point or even at the $19 or $20 price point, but she was going to buy three Tuesday night wine bottles for every one of those Saturday night bottles.
Right.
And so we were able to achieve success in the wine business by doing that. And it was interesting because one of the groups we supported in California, we said, you know, well, we're barefoot. If you're barefoot, you can't really walk on the beach and step on a piece of glass. It has to be a clean beach. So maybe we should support the groups that are cleaning the beach. And the biggest one out here was the Surfrider Foundation, which had just gotten started. And by the time we got to Florida, they had expanded into Florida, and they had chapters up and down the Florida coast on both the east and west coast. And so when we went into Publix on a test market, our friends at Surfrider Foundation went in and bought our wines, and we passed the test and got in all the stores. So now you have the largest brand in the United States. Our acquirers did that. We took it up to 600,000 cases. It's the largest wine brand in the United States today, and it used our DNA of Worthy Cause Marketing to get there. So basically, word of mouth. So that's a little bit about Barefoot Wine. I can tell you that the wine aficionados at the time were totally incensed by Barefoot. They said, "You're cheapening wine. You know, you're making a joke out of it." We said, "No, we're not. We're after the beer drinkers, and we're going to make them like wine, and before you know it, they'll be buying your wine." And sure enough, 10 years later, they were calling us up and thanking us from some of the greatest wineries in California and saying, we got a tasting room full of people here who got started on Barefoot Wine. So anyway, that's kind of the story.
So you were sort of like the first $2 Chuck, only it was the $5 Magnum.
Well, in a sense, but we had a sense of humor. And other than the nickname $2 Chuck, there isn't too much funny about that wine. And we also...
Careful.
Yeah. We also supported the community. In addition to talking to wine buyers and forklift drivers and bottling line operators, we also went into the communities around the markets that had our product and asked them what they were interested in. And I think that that was quite unique at the time. And because we supported the causes that the communities were interested in, they had a social reason to buy our wines. And I think that's one of the best things that came out of Barefoot Wines was our understanding of what the community needs and our way of working with them and actually finding all of these networks that already existed that just by supporting them, they turned around and supported us in return. And I thought that was really quite a feat, Ron.
Without question, I mean, it's...
Yeah.
I just want to say, it's just... I, at the winery, get requests every two or three days for something else, and I try to do what I can for it, but we get inundated with all of these requests for donations for wines and stuff. You know, how, you know, in your experience, how do you handle all that?
Well, first of all, you know, obviously, if people think that you're the house of free wine, they're going to
yes.
knock your door in, okay? So what you have to remember, we call it Worthy Cause marketing, and I want to underline the word marketing, okay? For one thing, we donated to the causes that resonated with what we were doing, okay? So what were we doing? We were doing recreational wine, and so where is that done? Well, that's done in parks. It's done on beaches, okay? And when you take a look at a barefoot, you see a barefoot in the sand, you know, you don't know if it's a man or woman, black or white, gay or straight. You don't know if it's a Republican or a Democrat. You just know that that's the imprint, that's the impression that a human being makes on the earth. So we decided to back basically the groups that were promoting clean environment, you know, equal rights, those kinds of things. Now, there was people from all different groups that were asking us for wine, but we couldn't afford to give them all wine, but we could afford to give wine to the people who had members, and this is important, that were in the neighborhoods of the stores where our wines were for sale and would have a direct impact on our wine sales. So they were like, you know, local community fundraisers. The other thing, too, is, like I say, it's marketing, right? So you're not just giving wine away, but what you're doing is you're supporting their cause in ways that they can't support their cause, whether it's sending your people to help them set up and tear down, or whether it's taking their message and putting it on a little neck talk or a little tag on your wine or mentioning them on your website. And in return, you're asking them to do 18 things that they can do that don't cost them anything but sure help you market your wine. For instance, they've got to put you on their website. They've got to call you a supporter. They've got to tell their members that you support them and why you support them. They've got to let you tell their members why you support them. They also have to let you put a piece of paper down in front of every table that at the $200 a plate fundraiser, and you only donate wine to dinners. You don't donate wine that's going to be used from behind the bar because nobody can see the label anyway. And, you know, if they're going to sit there for 2 hours and listen to some speaker, the least they can do is be looking at your label the whole 2 hours. And on this piece of paper, it says, you know, we support the Boys and Girls Club of Tallahassee, Florida, because of the great work they're doing for the kids. And, you know, tonight we're having chicken and dumplings, and we've got Sauvignon Blanc to go with the chicken and dumplings. And if you like it, it's available at these five fine stores that are within 5 miles of where you're sitting here tonight. And then you go to those five stores, and you say, we're going to do a fundraiser over here at the Boys and Girls Club, and we were wondering if you'd like to have your name on the list of places where those members can go buy their wine. Now, these members are paying $200 a plate, so they're already qualified wine buyers. Another question, and they already live in your neighborhood. These are your customers. So would you like to have your name on the list? And when they say yes, the next thing you say is, where do you want the display? So it works together. You know, this is Lincoln leveraging. This is not one-sided either way. You recognize that the Worthy Cause needs help, and you help them, and you ask them to give you what they have that you can use, which is access to their membership. Now, young people today call it, you know, network marketing. Well, heck, we were using network marketing before there was social networks. And the network was the nonprofit organization. The hub of the network was their meetings and their fundraisers. And that's where the people who had the money in the community who were supporting those fundraisers and who, by the way, were wine aficionados would go. So it's not a one-way street either way. It's definitely a two-way street. And each party helps the others, and you can't afford to help everybody. but you got to be really careful. When you donate a bottle of wine, you're there with your list of things that you want them to do.
Excellent, excellent ideas, Sal. I mean, all of you people who are listening out there, looking at starting up a winery or anything along that line, that is just, I mean, a fantastic approach to it. I love that. And let me help give you a little boost to your promo here. All this information is in your book.
Yes, thank you. It is. The Barefoot Spirit. We spent about a year and a half writing it with Rick Cushman and another year editing it and getting it published. It just came out in May of this year.
Oh,
and
wow.
We've gotten some great reviews on it. So people say, for instance, we had a young business student that said, this is the first business book that I've actually finished. Imagine. And that's because it was fun tales. It's not prescriptive text.
And it was fun writing it because, you know, we're with a wine guy, Rick Cushman, who is a pretty good writer in his own right. You know, he wrote a book called The Movable Thirst, and it was about driving around in Napa Valley and visiting all the tasting rooms, and it's his descriptions, and it's hilarious about, you know, everything from the pretentious attitudes of some of the people in the wine business to how people behave in the tasting room and everything else, and a bunch of nuggets of wisdom. When we read that book, we were laughing so hard, we said, this guy's going to write our book. And so, you know, we had him over from Sacramento. He'd come to our house, which is like, you know, about 120 miles away. So he'd drive out to our house, which is out on the coast. And he'd spend the night or a couple of nights. And, gee, 100 dinners and over 100 bottles of wine later, we had a book. But the book was about 5 inches thick. And so I said, hey, Rick, you know, how are you going to ever get this down to like 285 pages so that people will read it? He said, well, you know, they asked the sculptor when he was facing the block of marble how he was going to make the likeness of the king. And he says, oh, that's easy. I'll just chip away everything that doesn't look like the king.
There you go.
So he chipped it all away, and what you got now is a real easy read. It's a good beach read. It's perfect for Florida beaches. And, you know, if you do take a vacation, be sure to take the Barefoot Spirit along. You know, you can buy it online. It's inexpensive. It's like, you know, $15.95 is a cover price, but I don't think anybody spent that much on the Internet. So just shop around, and it's worth every penny. A thousandfold, I guarantee it, people are going to really get a kick out of it. And they can also go to our website, which is www.barefootwinefounders.com. So like we're the founders of Barefoot Wine, it's barefootwinefounders.com. And, you know, you'll get some insights, not just into the wine business, but into the business. And you'll also be able to read some free excerpts from The Barefoot Spirit. And I think you'll read enough of it, you'll get hooked, and you'll want to read the rest.
Mike, you had a comment?
Yes. I hope you're not giving away too much of the book because I just purchased it off of Barnes & Noble. So,
good for you. There's so many stories in the book, and they're all fun. I think that you'll be very happy.
Well, good. I don't usually move that fast, especially during an interview. I'm usually taking notes, but when I started reading reviews, I was checking up on things. I go, oh, they authored a book too. Well, let me look into it. And the reviews are fantastic. I mean, it's just everything has been so positive, both from, you know, the professional critics and everything, and the readers like on Amazon. You can go to Amazon.com, search for The Barefoot Spirit. It'll show it. It's a bigger title than that, but the short of it is The Barefoot Spirit. You search on Amazon or Barnes & Noble's or just on Google, and you'll find links to it. And all of the reviews have been so good, even from just, you know, general people from all over, and it's fantastic. So based on that and what y'all were talking about, I said, you know what, I'm going to go. I have a little account and everything on – well, I have it on both of those, but I just chose Barnes & Noble for some reason. But so I picked it off of there, and it's on my tablet now. So there you go.
Well, that's
fantastic.
Excellent, Mike. And yes. I do hope that you will let us know what you think about it when you finish reading it.
Oh yeah, I'm sure we'll have something on one of the shows, or I'll send you something. Yeah, but it's definitely everything's been positive about it. So everybody out there listening, definitely worth it. So go out there and check it out. That's all I
wanted. Thank you. You know, when we did the Barefoot Wine, we wanted to demystify the wine business. When we started in that industry, it was about 6-1 beer drinkers over wine drinkers. This country in the late 1980s and early 90s was predominantly a beer-consuming country. And today those numbers have changed radically. Now it's like only 2-1. And we like to think that Barefoot's fun approach to wine had something to do with that. You know, in those days, beer never talked about, sneaking up on the hops at 3:30 in the morning and, brewing the wine, brewing the beer, punching down the caps and all these things we talk about in the wine industry. They were saying things like, hey, it's Miller time, or just want to be your bud, or the silver bullet. And so their slogans were kind of fun and partnering with you and friendly and saying, not so much this is how beer is made, but here's how you have a good time with beer. So when we got into the wine industry, and of course we didn't know anything about it, so a lot of the stuff we did, we didn't know any better, and so we just did it. And one of the things we did, we said, well, wine should be fun too, so let's have a fun slogan. So we came up with Get Barefoot and Have a Great Time. And to us, that was kind of a beer of a slogan, applied to the wine industry. And, people really resonated with that. Boy, we had people wearing big feet on their T-shirts, and, we had sticky feet in the stores that would walk you down the aisle to where the Barefoot was in the store. And when we were new, they put us on the bottom shelf. So how do you see that? So we said, okay, if we're going to be working the foot traffic, then we'll create some feet. We'll put some feet, walk them down the aisle, and then they'll turn left abruptly and walk into the set where Barefoot is on the floor. but the idea was, to have fun. And I was the president and CEO, and Bonnie was the vice president. And my title was Head Stomper, and her title was Original Foot. And we had a CPA. His name was Doug McCorkle, and we called him the Cork, because somebody had to put a stop to it, And this is the guy who says no, So he was the Cork. And everybody had their little title. And so it was a fun place to work, and I think that's the whole thing. If you're gonna go to all the trouble to make wine and sell it, you better have fun doing it, because it's a fun product. It's a fun group of people. The people in the wine industry are great people. They're probably the least competitive of all the industries. Wine people will help you. If you go to a wine tasting, you don't have a corkscrew, the other guy will lend it to you. If you need a piece of scotch tape, the other guy will come over and help you, whatever it is. And, these guys are ostensibly your competition, but because we're all under the same laws and rules and regulations and the hoops we have to jump through to get our product to market, we all feel like, hey, we're all on the same boat over here. So we better work together. So we have more in common than we have differences. And I think that's really wonderful when you go to the wine country, whether, it's in Florida, Georgia, or California, or Virginia, you'll notice that there's an air of camaraderie among the people who have wineries. And I think that's one of the wonderful things about our industry.
That's one of the things that I've always said. If I'm in the middle of fermentation, or if I have a problem and I'm not sure what to do with it, I would feel no hesitation to pick up the phone and contact any of the other wineries here in Florida and say, hey, I'm having this problem, what do you suggest? And I know they would answer me honestly and tell me how to get through it. And that's the way all over the country. We've talked to wineries on the program all over, and people in the wine industry enjoy what they're doing. They love to talk about it, and it's a great field to be in, without question, a great field to be in.
Absolutely. Some of the nicest people we've met have been in the wine industry. They're a great group of people. One thing is, competition, yes. However, people that enjoy wines don't just buy one. They buy several and during the week or during the month. And so you kind of spread the love around, you know? So
yeah.
you don't feel like, well, if they buy your wine, they're not going to buy mine. We really are all in it together.
Yes, and,
People's tastes change over the years, too.
Oh,
so they started off, you know, with really fruity, sweet wines. Remember White Zinfandel, and, you know, then White Zinfandel gave way to Pinot Grigio, and then Pinot Grigio gave way to Moscato, you know, and so what's the next sweet wine? And, of course, then you see that these same people, when they get to be like 45, 50 years old, they're going for the drier wines. They're going for, you know, the bigger cabs, or the, you know, they're going for the Malbec. They want to taste wines that are a little drier and have more character. So I think that's the other thing about the wine industry that's interesting, is that people's tastes change over the years. And depending upon where you are in life and where you are in your wine discovery experience, different varietals appeal to you. And I think that's all great.
You mentioned, and I got a couple of questions here I'm going to throw together. You mentioned that you started out with Sauvignon Blanc and a Cabernet Sauvignon. I was just on Barefoot website, which I understand, you know, it's different than yours, but there is a whole bunch of wines there now. Did you start expanding? Were you the guys that started to do this one and then this one and this one? Or did that come? How deep into your venture did all these different wines start popping up? And another point I want to ask, what's the relationship between Michael and Bonnie here?
Ah, so I don't know which one to answer first. Relationship between Michael and Bonnie is we've been together 30 years, and we're very happy together. We chose to live in Sonoma County because we both love the weather here. We love being next to the Pacific Ocean, and the great soil here not only produces fine fruit, but also fine vegetables, and we also have just wonderful food in this area and great parks. We love to hike. So that's why we moved here. That's how we kind of got stuck in the wine industry, so to speak. So
from
30
where?
Years we've been together. That's our relationship. And fortunately, we can not only have a romantic relationship, but also we work well in business. So that's our relationship. Michael will tell you about our varietals.
One quickly, from where? You said you moved there. From where?
Well, Bonnie moved to the wine country from the Portland area. And
oh.
I moved to the wine country from the San Francisco area. So we were both what you call urban refugees. And, of course, you know, when they move to the country, they do it with a vengeance, right? So we don't want to see it developed. We don't want a new supermarket right across the street. As a matter of fact, we like the trees just fine. And so, you know, being urban folks who grew up, like you did, well, I don't know if you did, but like Florida, California have a very similar past. They got overdeveloped in our lifetimes. And you see that, and then when you go to the country, you go, oh, for God's sakes, don't overdevelop this. Let's just save this. So we were both those kind of folks, and we moved to the country, and boy, we really embraced it. And we're living the wine country lifestyle today. And, you know, that's, to us, is the quality of life. That's why you do it. And so that's part of it. As far as Bonnie and I, you know, being together for 30 years, she says, yeah, we've been together for 30 years, and the last 28 have been terrific.
We won't ask.
Yeah. But, you know, you always go through a period of adjustment with a person. You know, you have to decide how much of their stuff you're going to put up with and how much of your stuff they're going to put up with. So there's a lot of compromise, and you have to decide what's important. And it's kind of a maturing experience for both sides of a couple. And I just hope everybody can get over the first couple of years, because they're kind of tough.
And, yeah, always.
And then when you settle down and you say, okay, well, this person's good for me, I think the reason that Bonnie and I work so well together is we have completely different skill sets. You know, Bonnie is what I call a minutia person. You know, she's going to cross the T's and she's going to dot the I's. She's going to make sure that the clauses in the contracts are correct. She can manage a bottling line. She can handle the federal government. She can handle the state government. She knows all about dealing with the lawyers and the, you know, the compliance people and all this stuff. That stuff would drive me crazy.
That's a special skill set.
Yeah.
That is. That's a special skill set to be able to do that.
I am so blessed to have somebody like that at my side, because I go out there and trip on my shoelaces trying to wield my sword around, you know, if I didn't have somebody to make sure they were tied. So for me, it's more about, you know, marketing and, you know, strategic planning and, you know, the big picture type stuff. And well, that's about Bonnie and I. And as far as our varietals are concerned, it's interesting. That's a really interesting question because, you know, if your listeners are new in the wine business, we recommend that they don't go into too many SKUs right off the bat. Your winery has got to be known for something. And so we at Barefoot were known for being, you know, the salt and pepper act that came in a pig that tastes good and that was priced right for probably the first 7 or 8 years. And that really gave us a great foothold in the market, if you'll pardon the pun. But then what happened, and this is funny, you know, we started selling wine to the Japanese, and they bought a bunch of truckloads and sent them over there. And then all of a sudden, they stopped buying it. And we said, well, you know, you guys were buying 1,000 cases a month, every month for the past 18 months, and all of a sudden you guys stopped cold. What's up? They said, oh, you know, the Japanese refrigerators are small. You know, they're not the size of your big American refrigerator. Your big pig won't fit in our little refrigerator.
So therefore,
we decided to produce 750s. So we went from 2 SKUs to 4 SKUs. And for those of you who don't know, an SKU is a stock keeping unit. You know, it's that little barcode that's on the back of everything, you know, including your head anymore. So we did that, and then we had buyers who said, you know, you guys got a red and a white, but you don't have a pink. You really need to have a pink. So we came out with White Zinfandel, because this was before the days of Moscato, and it was before the days of Pinot Grigio. So we came out with White Zinfandel, and it was a good entry-level product, and, boy, it was a big hit with the ladies and what have you. And so now we had 6 SKUs. And then somebody said, you know, you really need to have Chardonnay. You got Sauvignon Blanc, but Chardonnay is more popular. So then we did that. So we had an explosion of SKUs in the middle 90s. But interestingly enough, and this is my advice to you young wine producers, is it did not increase our sales, because everybody has like a mind share, you know, and there's a brand width. It's like they're not building more shelf space. So you can make all of the different varietals you want to, but you're not necessarily going to sell more because you're trying to satisfy everybody. So it's better to specialize in something and, you know, be the master of that than the jack of all trades. And it took us many years before we started to get back into the growth cycle, another 2 or 3 years. And then we started to get in the growth cycle. And, oh, boy, then came the champagne, and then came more varietals. We came out with red Zinfandel. In those days, because there was so much white Zinfandel, if you were selling Zinfandel, you had to call it red Zinfandel because people wouldn't know what it was otherwise. So, yeah, we did that, but our acquirer really has stepped it up with a lot more choices. And in our opinion, they're all fantastic. We really like the new sparkling wines that they've come out with and the refreshed wines. They're fantastic, especially for warm climates. But, yeah, so our advice is start small, stay concentrated for several years until you get a foothold, and then expand, but expand very slowly.
It's fascinating. I think the one thing that you said there that caught my ear faster than anything was that even with expanding all the different brands or all the different varietals and all the different wines, your sales did not increase. It stayed pretty even. That's interesting. I would think that it would start jumping up, but if you start thinking about it a little bit, somebody's going to walk in and say, okay, I've tried the Pinot Grigio or the Cabernet. I am going to try their Merlot or Malbec this time and not buy two of them, but just buy a different one.
Well, the real issue is that the person who owns the store is going to prevent you from having those choices because he's going to say, look, you know, we've got the Barefoot Cabernet Sauvignon and Sauvignon Blanc in here, and you come up with two more SKUs, so I give you more space, and then you come up with another SKU and another one. So you guys got eight spaces now in my store. Which one do you want to trade out?
Uh-huh.
And so that's what happens is you run into the trade-out wall. And it isn't that your downhill consumer doesn't want to try what you have. It's that the gatekeeper, the store owner, the manager at the store is putting his foot down because you and everybody else is trying the same game.
Right.
We talk about this in the Barefoot Spirit because it was a real surprise to us. You can get a CPA, and he'll go into the back room, and he'll start adding up, you know, the profits you're making on this number of cases, add another varietal, and he would just add in that another percentage of profit, and it really doesn't work that way. You're limited to a certain amount of space on the shelf, doesn't matter how many products you've got, and that's one of the very interesting things that we talk about in the Barefoot Spirit book.
That's interesting. That's a very interesting point there. So you opened in 1988, correct?
Our first bottling was in 1986.
Yeah. 86,
at Easter. Uh-huh.
Your first bottling in 1986. I'm trying to do a little timeline here. And excuse me. And this was in a basement, a garage,
it was in the laundry room. That was our first office. And, of course, we had the large winery that did all the bottling and stored our wines and shipped them out for us. But, we were in our laundry room. It's the only place where we had room because we couldn't afford a washer and dryer. So we put our office there. We were looking for a desk, so we went out to the old barn and found a door, wiped it off, put it on two sawhorses, and that was our first desk. You can start small. You can start without money. You can start without a lot of knowledge or experience in your industry, and, yes, you can make it big, and that's exactly what we did. And that's why we wrote a story about it, because we really want to encourage other people out there, young entrepreneurs and business owners, and let them know all the hardships that we went through and all the resolutions that we came to, all the lessons that we learned, and how we succeeded. Because it was quite a challenge for us all the way through. I can't think of one easy day that we had. So we've got lots of stories to tell in the Barefoot Spirit, and it was really a learning lesson. And maybe if somebody reads that book and tries some of the lessons out, that we learned, it won't take them 20 years to be a success. Maybe it'll take them a little less.
You know, and then the other thing, too, is the wine industry, it's so glorious. People look at it, you know, with rose-colored lenses. Davis Bynum, who is our friend, and I grew up with his son, Hampton, who was a newspaper man, and they say that he left the news press for the wine press. And the wine press was in his garage, so they named him Barefoot Bynum. And he was a character. And he said, you know, Michael, he says, any fool can make wine, but they've got to be a tireless fool.
Yes, that's true. That's very true.
So we were the tireless fools, and I'm telling you, it really is a lot of work. The winemaking, people focus on the winemaking aspect of the wine industry, but the real work is not the winemaking. The real work is getting it on the shelf in places like Poughkeepsie, Illinois, and keeping it on the shelf there. So, you know, we had situations the wine would sell, and it would sell out. It would sell off the shelf. It wouldn't get replaced. It wouldn't reorder. And you'd think, gee, the store's got an interest in reordering it. You know, the distributor has an interest in reordering it. And the fact is they do not, because there are so many wines that want to be on the shelf. They're just looking for any little opening. And if your wine sells out and it doesn't get replaced, guess what? That's where their wine goes. And then you come back and say, oh, well, you know, we were here and we sold wine here for years and all of a sudden we're gone. Well, you guys, you know, didn't get reordered. Sorry about that. See, so it's an eye-opener. It's a lot of work. You know, maybe you're better off to just have a tasting room, let people drive up and buy your wine. But once you start marketing wine, and we had to because, you know, Ron, when you're selling wine for $5 a bottle, you got to sell 200,000 cases a year just to break even.
That's right.
Well, why doesn't America have a good $5 bottle of wine? There's a good reason. We know the answer. We got the T-shirt on that one.
Yes, and that's so true. I mean, you can sell one bottle of wine at $100. It's going to take you a lot of those fives to hit that. So, you know. The Barefoot Winery now, you have sold it. Is that correct?
Yes, we sold it at the first part of 2005, but we did take it up to 600,000 cases. We were in how many states were we in? We were in 50 states. We were in 27 different foreign countries. We took top awards for growth, and we took top awards for our wines since the very beginning. We took a lot of awards in all the competitions. So we had the best-tasting bottle at the lowest price. And that was another reason why we were so successful.
Fantastic.
You know, people would say, well, do you guys have, you know, a kind of a motto or a slogan? You know, what are you guys doing here? And we said, well, what we have is the best wine at the best price. And they said, well, everybody says they're the best wine at the best price. I said, well, the best price is the price at which most wine sells, and that price is a velocity price point. And today that price is like $7.99 to $9.99. So to be the best price or to be the best wine at the best price, it's not the producer's opinion. It has to be the opinion of third parties that are tasting the wine in contests throughout the country, and write-ups and ratings. And so what we did is we produced a wine at the velocity price point that had more medals than any other wine at that velocity price point. Mm-hmm. So that's why we said best wine at best price.
Did you continue to source your grapes from the same area the entire time, even when you expanded to different ones?
In order to have the best wine at the best price, we had a non-vintage wine, which meant that we used grapes that were harvested in various years, and we had a California appellation, which means that our grapes came from any place in California. Now, there's a lot of fine growing regions. Sonoma County is a smaller appellation within California that produces fine wines, and there's many smaller appellations within Sonoma County, very specific vineyards and growing regions that are really outstanding and well-known by people that follow wines and the awards that they take. However, in order to satisfy our customers' desire to pay this price, which was a low price, we sourced our wines throughout the state, so we had the greatest area to choose from, and we also had various vintages, so we had, you know, that opportunity, that variety to choose from as well. And we wanted a consistent flavor, so it required trying a lot of different wines, and we had an excellent winemaker that knew how to adjust wines and how to blend them just right to make them award-winning wines. So we were very fortunate always with our winemaker. Michael and I, neither of us know how to make wine. I finally have learned how to pronounce a few of the names, but
it's Rosé.
Rosé. And yeah. Merlot, not Merlot, right?
Merlot, yes.
Merlot. Okay, the T is silent. You see, we learn things like this as we go along.
Yeah, we do. We do. Your same winemaker was with you the whole time?
No, actually, we hired Jennifer Wall, who is probably the most awarded winemaker in California, in 1995. And by that time, before that, we had a winemaker who was good, and he was doing a good job, but we faced a wine shortage, a real wine shortage in California. And, of course, if you're working backward from the shelf price, well, you know, then the price of the wine is really critical to you. You have to remember that the cost of the glass and the foils and the corks and every other part of a wine package costs pretty much the same, you know, whether you got the Chateau Lafite from Rothschild or you got the Chateau Lafite of California wine barefoot. It doesn't matter.
You're speaking French now. You said you didn't do that.
Well, we have fun with them. There's a great story in the book. There's a great story in the book, and I'm not going to tell it because it's worth the price of the book just to read the story. You're going to love it. But we make fun of the French. But, you know, we do it in good spirit. And the thing is that when you are sourcing wine, it's critical that you can buy wine at a certain price point because, like I say, the corks, foils, glass, and all that stuff, labels, is pretty much the same price.
Right.
So in order to hit that shelf price that you want to hit. So about 1994, California has this big grape drought, and it goes on until about 1996, and there just isn't enough wine to go around. And so our winemaker at the time tells our salespeople that they should slow down on their wine sales. And we'd been in Hawaii on vacation. We come back, and boy, sales down there in the dumpster, and we couldn't figure it out. We went, what the heck happened? So we talked to our sales manager. So winemaker says there isn't enough wine. If we keep our heads down, we can get through this drought, you know. And so he asked us to slow down on our wine sales. I said, oh my God. I looked at Bonnie. I said, you know what? We probably need a new winemaker like yesterday then. And so we went out and we started looking for a new winemaker, and we called our friend who actually helped us get into the business in the first place, the guy with all the grapes that didn't get paid for.
Oh.
And we said, hey, you know of any good winemakers? He said, well, he says, we had a young lady come in here to our winery. He worked for another big winery. And he said, but the board of directors didn't want to hire her because they thought she was too assertive. And we said, well, send her over right now. That's what we need. We need an assertive person. And so we hired one of the first women winemakers, and it was interesting because here we are, you know, designing wines for a predominantly female audience, and so we have a female winemaker. And
great.
She turns out to just be brilliant, and we said, okay, so here's the problem. We really do have a wine drought. What are we going to do about this? She says, you know, somewhere in the world, they've got too much wine. And sure enough, in southern France, they had too much red wine. And in Chile, they had too much white wine. So we put out for a couple of years Maule Valley Chilean Sauvignon Blanc and Rhone Cabernet Sauvignon from France.
Wow.
And what was interesting was that people were more loyal to the Barefoot name and the consistent flavor than they were to even the California appellation.
Yeah.
So that was a real eye-opener for us. And, of course, the California grapes came back online by like 98, 97, 98, and we were able to go back to our California appellations. But it's an interesting story. And
wow,
there's just a ton of stories like that in the book that are eye-openers. If you love wine, if you are a wine connoisseur, aficionado, or producer, or you sell wine in the wine industry, you're listening to this broadcast, you should really get down and buy the Barefoot Spirit today. It's a hoot, and it's about our industry in a way that nobody's ever written about our industry. And it's an industry that is really misunderstood by the general public, and this will really clear the air from people who actually were outsiders. So we call this an outsider's inside view of the wine industry.
And also, not just those in the industry. Anyone out there listening to it, it sounds like a great read. Check the book out at less than $20. It's a great way to have just an enjoyable couple of evenings or by the beach or whatever. Come down and visit us here in Florida and bring the book with you and sit on the beach. You guys, Michael and Bonnie, both also do speaking engagements around the country, I understand, too.
Yes, and as a matter of fact, we're heading your direction. We're going to be there next week, and we're speaking at a number of universities.
We're at in Florida.
Well, we're going to be at Fort Myers.
We're going to go down to Fort Myers to Florida Gulf Coast, and we're going to be speaking to a wine appreciation group at the Gulf Coast University, and then we're going to go up to DeLand, and we're going to go to the Stetson University. You know the Stetson hat guy?
And
that's an interesting university. They have a family, they teach family business up there. So these are people whose parents have businesses, and they're going to go in and inherit the business, or they're going to go into business with their significant other. And so they're interested in, you know, how Bonnie and I did it without killing each other and being a success. And then we're going to go down to our main event, which is at the University of Tampa, and we're going to have a big fundraising dinner down there.
Actually, it's in the morning, and there's tickets available. It's Wednesday, the 25th of September, and if you contact UT Tampa, you'll find out all about it, and it's about 7 to 10 in the morning on Wednesday, September 25th. Michael and I will be talking. And we'll also have our books there for sale.
So, yeah, that'll be a chance to see the dog and pony show and have a few laughs. And then we're going to go up to Gainesville and speak to those folks up there at the University of Florida up there, and they're entrepreneur students. And then we're leaving Gainesville, and we're going up to Columbus, Georgia, and we're going to be speaking at Columbus University in Georgia, and that'll be on Tuesday. So,
October 1st.
So we're going to be in your neck of the woods. Well, not as far south as you are, Ron, but we're going to be in western Florida and northern Florida and southern Georgia. So I'm sure it'll be just as hot and humid there as it is down where you are.
We are located just north of Tampa, and Land O'Lakes is just north of Tampa.
Why I thought you were down there. You're in Land O'Lakes. Well, heck, we should drop by. I hear you got a big spread out there.
Yeah, well, it's a big ranch. Yeah, the operation's small, but it's a big ranch we're on. But if I get an opportunity, I'm gonna see if I can't. If I can't attend the breakfast, at least stop by and introduce myself and do a face to face with the two of you. So,
please do. I think it's 7 to 10, and it's down there. You can go to our website and see where it is. And it's 7 to 10 on Wednesday.
Wednesday.
It's on Wednesday, right? Or it's Tuesday?
It's Wednesday.
Wednesday, yeah.
Wednesday the 25th.
Right. Mm-hmm. And, then Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, we're going to be in your territory. And we're going to be looking around for fun things to do and fun people to do it with. So maybe we'll reach out for you, Ron.
Well, we will look forward to that if you get an opportunity. That would be fantastic. So, Mike, do you have anything you want to ask Michael and Bonnie here?
Yeah, I was looking at your – well, first off, I saw the chocolate cake with Pinot Noir frosting recipe. That caught my attention. Totally threw me off. You're giving back quite a bit to the community and just everywhere with your it's the part of your page. It says Our Passions, and it says giving back. Are you still participating with like Walk for a Cause and all the like the beach cleanup and all that?
Okay, the folks who acquired our brand, Ian J. Gallo.
Okay,
they're continuing the DNA.
Gotcha.
Which we created. And we personally are involved with many nonprofits across the country. One of the nonprofits that we're helping right now is called the EVB. That's the Entrepreneurial Veterans, or the Entrepreneurial Boot Camp for Veterans with Disabilities. Now, these are returning vets. They're post 9/11 vets who've got service-related disabilities, and they all want to be their own bosses. They want to start their own businesses. So Michael and Bonnie are speaking to them at college after college across the country. We're going to be in Dallas next the end of October, and we're going to be speaking to their alumni about some of the lessons we learned building the Barefoot brand, or building any brand for that matter. And so we're giving back today by giving our knowledge. We're basically saying to young people, hey, you know that dark, scary tunnel that you're just about ready to go through? Well, we just came out of it. And what we have to offer you is a flashlight and a hard hat to get you through it. So they're all ears. They want to know what it's like in there. And there's never been more entrepreneurs starting out in this country than right now. I think the recession eliminated an awful lot of jobs. There's a lot of people out there that are taking a look at their garages and their laundry room and saying, well, maybe self-employment is my only form of employment. So there's a great interest. And one of the things I got to say about Florida is you have about 10 or 15 schools of entrepreneurship in that state that are just doing a fabulous job of bringing students up to date with the latest in technology, the latest advances, the latest opportunities to go into business for themselves. So we're quite proud to go down there and help them. And by the way, we still clean up beaches personally. Every time we go to the beach, Bonnie makes sure that my backpack is full of garbage before I can leave.
Good for you, Bonnie.
There's a story about that in the book, too, I think you'll enjoy. And also an illustration. There are 10 chapters, and there's an illustration in each chapter. So it's kind of fun.
Great.
Oh, good.
So
yeah, I can't wait to get started on that. That's I think that's it. So who knows? Maybe we'll see you the September 25th, 7 to 10 a.m. in Tampa.
Yeah, we'll be there.
Interesting. Okay. Very good. That's all I have. This has been great.
Yeah. All right. Give, again, we have been, but unless you have anything else to say, which, you know, thank you so much for being on, but give us all the information again on the Barefoot Spirit, how to get a hold of it, you know, just in your website and everything else. So people out there can get the book.
Exactly. Okay. It's called The Barefoot Spirit. And The Barefoot Spirit is written by the Barefoot Wine Founders, the original Barefoot Wine Founders. It's a story of how the nation's number one brand was created and got to be a bestseller without advertising. And it's a great back of the screen view of the so-called mysterious wine business. We've got, Brian Tracy. I don't know if you know who he is, but everybody knows Deepak Chopra and Tony Robbins. Well, Brian Tracy was one of their mentors. And he says, this is a warm, wonderful, inspiring book that entertains and motivates at the same time. The book's available online at Amazon. You can buy it through our site. Our website is www.barefootwinefounders.com. And for those of you who are in business, wine business, or any kind of business, if you go to that site, you can click on the RSS feed and you get a new 600-word blog post every week from Michael and Bonnie. I write them and she corrects them and edits them out and makes them readable, thank God. And they are little pearls of wisdom that get dripped out every week, and I think you'll find that interesting. So that's barefootwinefounders.com, and it's The Barefoot Spirit.
Thank you both so much for taking the time to join us tonight. It's really been a fantastic show, and all of you out there listening, grab the book. It is it's fun, interesting, and you don't have to be in the business to enjoy it. So get out and get it. Bonnie and Michael, thank you. It was fantastic. Thank you for joining us. We really did appreciate you taking the time to do this, and hopefully I'll get a chance to meet you guys over the next couple of weeks here.
That would be great, Ron, and it's been nice talking to you, too, both of you, you and Mike.
Thank you.
And we've had a lot of fun.
Thanks for having us on your show.
Oh, it was great. Thank you very much. You all have yourself a wonderful evening there.
Shall do. We look forward to seeing you next week.
Well, I hope I can get away so I can get down there and visit with you. Thank you very much, Al.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Okay. All yeah, right. Very good. Very,
that
very
was
cool.
Fun. Yeah.
I was.
And that book sounds great. That really sounds like a lot of fun. So.
Well, the reviews. I mean, everything you read about it is very positive, and you know, it's very highly recommended. So yeah, it's very good.
And so, check out their website. They keep posted too on where they're going to be speaking next. So if you are starting in any business, you know, they'll be down here in Florida and around the area and all that. But they also go around different parts of the country. So it's not, you know, keep in touch. They obviously know what they're doing about marketing. Some great ideas, some great thoughts there. So you can always check out where they're speaking next and go listen to them live and all that. And I'm sure they would enjoy that. Let them know that you heard them on All About Wine.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be cool.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah, very good. I took some notes while I was searching for that and looking at their website and everything. See, I thought they were still involved with Barefoot Wine and Barefoot Wine and Bubbly, I believe it was, but when they said
they sold
I didn't realize it.
They sold it to E.J. Gallo. But they, you know, they made it, you know, a household name. Everybody knows Barefoot. I mean, it's just...
Yeah. That's amazing. And sold to Gallo's, one of the largest...
The giant, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
like everywhere.
Giant.
So, very good. So. Very, very cool.
Fun interview.
Okay.
It was a good show.
Yeah. So we have, 26th would be, you don't have any events tonight or this weekend, right?
No, nothing this weekend.
Okay.
We got, actually Sunday, end of summer, autumn starts.
Yay!
Ooh. We got to pull out our jackets and the parkas and you know, sweaters and all that stuff Sunday. So we are looking forward to it here in Florida to get that autumn chill in the air.
Ooh, it'll probably be in the 80s.
Low 80s.
Well, then that's heavy coat weather then.
That's heavy coat.
The low 80s
might drop down in the upper 60s. Might. I doubt
there
it.
There you go. Get the winter gloves going. The fire started. There you go. We're all set.
Yeah.
Denver and Florida.
Sounds like a plan.
People up north are thinking, you know, 50s are wearing shorts, but it's just different down here. Very good. So we're going to be on next Thursday, which would be the 26th. Okay. And we'll talk about who we're going to have then. This was kind of sprung up recently, wasn't it, for tonight's guest?
Yeah. Let me tell you what happened on this.
Kind of a quick announcement.
Okay. Yeah, I have to confess on this. What happened was I'm on LinkedIn and lots of other social media, LinkedIn and lots of other social medias and stuff like that. And I continue posting stuff and reading stuff on there. And a few months back, I put on there my name, Blog Talk Radio, All About Wine. We need people who want to come on and join us. Anybody who wants to talk about their story or their winery, or if you're in the wine industry, contact me. Well, They did. Michael contacted me. And for some reason, it got dumped into garbage. And I was going through yesterday after I told you the computer act, you know, had a virus. I was going through yesterday cleaning out stuff and checking out stuff and all that, and I found his email. And I went, oh, wow. And so I called him. And he said, yeah, hi, great. Yeah, I'd love to be on the program. So it was that quick and that easy. But I lost the email for about 3 months there. So.
Oh, no. Wow.
Yes.
Okay. Well, things happen.
Thanks.
Okay.
Happen. And he understood, too. He said, yeah. He says, I know. I've done that, too. And I said, well, yeah. So. But
all right.
We found it. He got on. It was a great show. So.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And almost, was it 90 minutes? Yeah. Just under, that was very good.
About 90 minutes.
So, so check it out. You can check it out from their website, like you said, or you can go to, if you're on, if you prefer Amazon, you have a Kindle or something, or Barnes & Noble has the Nook, I guess it is, or one of the other formats. You can purchase that version of it, or they also have a paperback version. It's actually under $15, it looks like it's going to be a great read just based on the reviews and everything, and it's been really gotten some good attention there. So I can't wait to get into it and start it. That's going to be good. All right, so we will be back next Thursday. That's September 26th.
Yeah.
All right. 26th, and we'll be back with All About Wine next week. So tune in then, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Join us live. We prefer that, whichever way. But archived is also good. And but if you can join us live, you're listening out there live. Feel free to call us during the show, and let's talk about wine. So we give you the. I've been tweeting the number this evening, but that's how it goes because I know they're at the desk. But there you go. So maybe next time, all right? And we'll post the topic and everything. It's usually on the Facebook page, which is facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. And you can connect with us with the show that way. Ron's on there posting the guest information and everything else that's happening prior to the show. And you can follow us that way. And read about it on the Blog Talk Radio website when we post the show information on there. So, but it's always on Facebook first because that's where I usually get it from. So.
That's right. Yeah.
That's right.
Where I go into it and post it.
That's right. And then from there it goes to post. So there you go. Anyway, thanks again to our special guests, Michael and Bonnie. And can't wait to start the book again. And keep in touch. And who knows, maybe we'll see you Wednesday. So that'd be cool.
Yeah.
And they're going to be in Tampa. Yay. Okay. We'll close the show for tonight, and we'll see you all next Thursday. Thanks for tuning in, and you'll
Thank
have
you
a great
listening.
Week. Great weekend. Yeah. Thank you, and we'll see you next time.
We'll see you. Bye.
Yeah. Cool.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio. A special thanks to our special guests who have appeared on the show, and thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in and supporting All About Wine. Be sure to follow us on Twitter and like our Facebook page. Go to twitter.com or facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. We welcome your comments and questions by email at allaboutwine101@gmail.com. The email address again is allaboutwine101@gmail.com. All About Wine is a weekly program featuring Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery. The winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. From Interstate 75, take exit 285 and go west for approximately 4 miles. Or from US 19, the Suncoast Parkway, and US 41, go east on State Road 52. The winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m., for retail sales and wine tasting. Visit the gift shop and enjoy the peaceful setting outside under a large shady canopy of oak trees. Florida Estates Winery is pet friendly, and picnics are welcome. For more information, call area code 813-996-2113. That's area code 813-996-2113. Or visit us on the web at www.floridaestateswines.com. Again, that's floridaestateswines.com. Be sure to subscribe to our informative bi-weekly newsletter. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio.